Welcome to another episode of Spanish History 101, brought to you by Brian Spain Domain. And today we are going to talk about an important moment in Spanish history, the War of the Spanish Succession, which took place between 1701 and 1715. Now, in the last episode about Carlos II, the King of Spain, we learned that Spain was not falling apart, though it had gone through some pretty rough times. This King, Carlos, was the laughingstock of European history and history classrooms for centuries, mainly because of the many physical limitations and health issues that he suffered as a result of a genetic disorder, which was probably brought on by intra-family marriages, inbreeding, basically. But we also noted that he wasn't as incapacitated as people have treated him to be over the years, and with the help of a fairly productive and careful administration, he brought at least some stability to the country. However, because he was unable to have a child, he was sterile, and therefore he didn't have an heir to the throne. Ironically, this situation resulted in Spain, and Europe in fact, collapsing into one of the most tumultuous periods, at least in the 18th century, in a certain way in all of European history. It was a crisis that would grow to global proportions. And as I said, this was this War of the Spanish Succession. Now, to start off, let me tell you that this is one very, very complex war to explain. The geopolitics involved go all over the place, but let's try to simplify it. Now, on one level, as the name of this war suggests, this is a dispute over who will be the next king of Spain and its territories, and by extension, which family will be the next ruling house of Spain, and by extension, which country will benefit the most by that family taking over. The two main families are the Bourbons, Bourbons, from France, mainly led by the famous Sun King, Louis XIV. And the other family is the Habsburgs of Austria, basically the Holy Roman Empire, under the rule of Emperor Leopold I. Now, Spain, up to that point, had been ruled by the Habsburgs, the Spanish branch of that family, and Carlos II was the last of that branch. This is a different branch of the Habsburg family that Carlos II belonged to. And the two candidates for the throne were Philip V, Philip of Anjou, who was Louis XIV's grandson. I will be calling him Felipe V from here on in. And Carlos of Habsburg, Leopold's son. Now, what is at stake here? Well, basically, whoever gets control of Spain and its monarchy will control Spain's possessions both in Europe, and that includes Spain itself, as well as many parts of Italy and a place called the Spanish Netherlands, and its vast territories over in America, Central and South America, even parts of North America, as well as areas of Asia or the Pacific, at least, especially the Philippines. And then on top of that, there was a chance to corner many commercial rights and trade routes. And because of that, there were a number of other countries that had a huge interest in how things went. These included England, Holland, and Portugal. Now, how did this all begin? Well, as we mentioned, Carlos couldn't have a child and was aware of this predicament. And so he had to look for a way to come up with a peaceful transfer of power. Now, this is easier said than done when there isn't a clear-cut heir to the throne, because no matter who you put forward, there is a fear that not everyone's going to go along with the decision and will contest the person who was named to be the future king. And that's basically what will happen. Carlos, at first, named sort of a distant relative who doesn't really belong to either family. It's a boy named Joseph Ferdinand of Bavaria. It was a less controversial choice, and it made sense because of that. But unfortunately, Joseph Ferdinand, who was only 6 at the time, died 2 years later. So basically that idea got thrown out the window, and now he had to decide between either Felipe or Charles. So after a period of going back and forth, and it would be one and the other, and there were advisors pushing him in one direction and the other, in the end, before he died in 1700, he named Philip of Anjou, or Felipe V, to be the next king. And it was a surprise decision. In fact, in part because the French themselves had just signed an agreement a few months before that, stating that Charles would become the king. So when Carlos II died in 1700 and the announcement was made, it startled many, pleased basically no one except for the French. Now, Louis XIV was at first a little reticent to accept because he had already signed this agreement that I was telling you about. And he knew that if he went ahead with the proposal and accepted it, it would most likely cause a big problem in Europe and quite possibly end up being war. But he thought about the benefits and was probably wooed by the idea of controlling all that territory, not just in Europe, but around the world, and it was just too much for him to turn down. So he sent his son down to Spain to accept the throne. And this was in 1701, and war broke out. Now, at first, most of Spain was pretty much open to this new situation, not the war, but Felipe. They accepted him for the most part. And even in areas like Aragon and Catalonia and Valencia, which were historically suspicious of the French because they were neighbors and they weren't always friendly neighbors. And they were also adamant about preserving their laws and their institutions, sort of their identity. That's because up until then, the Habsburgs, for the most part, not always, but for the most part, were respectful of that. You had your different kingdoms and so. And Felipe had made no indication of wanting to centralize Spain the way basically his grandfather had done in France. And so for the first few years, things were pretty smooth in Spain. Felipe even lived in Barcelona for a few months before setting off to fight some wars in northern Italy. And why was he doing that? Well, one thing that made this war unusual was the fact that it really doesn't get started in Spain, despite the name. Much of the fighting got started over, as I said, in northern Italy, parts of Central Europe, in the Netherlands. And it was mainly a fight between Louis XIV and Leopold. But as I was telling you, other countries were involved. Leopold counted on the English and the Dutch to support him, and they called themselves the Allies. And the French also could count on Spain and Portugal. But it was mostly France, because once Felipe V gets to Spain and he discovers to his horror that there's basically no standing army there, and this once feared and yet admired Spanish navy, it was practically in shambles. So the great Spanish Empire, even the great Spanish fighting forces during the 16th century and even 17th century, known as the Tercios, everything was just practically in shambles. Anyway, eventually, hostilities reach Spain. The English, for example, early on make an unsuccessful intervention in Cadiz in the south, and then they moved north to Vigo, which is in Galicia, to try to intercept the gold and silver that was coming in on a fleet from the Americas. They arrived late and most of the treasure made it to Madrid, but they did manage to take some of it for themselves. There's some debate on just how much. Then in 1703, the Portuguese switched sides. That was a surprise to some, and joined the English, who had convinced them of the adverse effects of sticking with Spain and France and what it might mean to their business, to their trade. And when money became an issue, they decided to join the Allies. It also meant that Charles of Habsburg and his supporters had a foothold on the peninsula. So Charles, who called himself now Carlos III of Spain, even though that would not be official in the end, lands in Portugal and is ready to take over. This is a pivotal moment in the war, as it will bring the war also from the rest of Europe into Spain and actually cause a civil war there. Now that there are two individuals actively seeking to become king, and they are being backed by two parts of Spain. Felipe himself returns to Madrid also in 1703 and starts to reform the army and the navy, somewhat in the image of the armed forces that were being developed so successfully in France. If his country was to be a modern state, it needed to rely on a modern military apparatus. Now, concerns about the true intentions of this Bourbon king began to rise in some areas of Spain, especially in the northeast, as I was telling you before, in Aragon and Catalonia and so on. There was a Habsburg now who was trying to claim the throne, and since the Habsburgs had been pretty good to them over the years, they were starting to support Charles. Now, 1704 was a big year in the conflict. Hostilities increased in Spain. There were more battles, more fighting. But the most long-lasting event, with probably the biggest repercussions, is the taking over of Gibraltar by the British. It didn't require much because there really isn't much there beside this huge rock and some land surrounding it. But it was a tiny conquest that would have immense consequences, since it was strategically located right at there at the strait that went by the same name, and it was the gateway between the Mediterranean and the Atlantic. The English would never give it up, nor would the Spanish manage to get it back. And to this day, it belongs to the UK. It's just a little enclave in Spain, much to Spain's frustration. The other big moment that year actually took place in faraway Bavaria, and it was the famous Battle of Blenheim, where the Duke of Marlborough, I don't think he was a duke yet, in fact, I think he was a duke as a result of this victory, and his troops would rout the French side, making it one of the turning points of the war. The famous Blenheim Palace in England, a splendid place, is named in honor of the battle. And it also happens to be the place where Winston Churchill would be born 170 years later. It's considered to be one of the most important battles in history. Anyway, the war carries on in the two theaters, Spain and the rest of Europe. Felipe was somewhat more successful in Spain, but it didn't stop Charles from entering Madrid, in fact, in 1706 to take control of the government. He had some support from Carlos II's wife, Mariana of Neuburg, who was Austrian and had survived her husband and therefore supported an Austrian candidate. But for the most part, the people of Madrid were not too keen on this idea, and they refused to accept him. After a few months, he got tired of it and left for Valencia, where he had more backing. So that was in 1706. And then in 1707, just a few months later, the most decisive battle of the Iberian theater took place in a town called Almansa. It's a pretty town which is in the southeast corner of La Mancha, the province of Albacete, and it resulted in a clear victory for Felipe's side. Charles's cause was pretty much lost from that point onward. One unusual thing about this battle is that there weren't many Spaniards involved in terms of soldiers, military forces. It was mostly troops from other countries. But anyway, that wasn't the only result. Felipe, partly in response to the opposition that he was receiving from certain parts of Spain, especially Aragon and Valencia and even Catalonia, announced that they were no longer official kingdoms and that they would have to obey the decisions made by the court in Madrid. This is now the first of a series of decrees known as the Nueva Planta, which basically was going to be implemented in this country, a policy of centralization in Spain. And the power is going to start shifting to the center of the country where Madrid is, where Castile is, and it's going to start to drain that power from what Spain was before. Let me explain this a little better. In other words, we generally think of Spain's unification taking place by way of the marriage between Ferdinand and Isabella in the late 1400s. But as I've told you many times, that was not a true unification. It was done through a marriage. It was sort of a de facto unification. But the kingdoms, Aragon, Castile, Catalonia, which wasn't a kingdom, but it was its own region, as separate entities still existed. That is, they had their own laws, their own customs, their own legislative bodies, their own currencies, their own traditions, and even their own languages in many cases. But Felipe is going to start to change that drastically. And this is the beginning of a major change for Spain as a nation, the true beginning of the establishment of a nation called Spain, as well as the concentrating of the political power of the country to its center in Madrid. And as you would expect, this measure would not be very well received in certain areas of Spain, especially Catalonia, but we'll get to that in a second. Anyway, despite the victory, the war goes on. The Bourbons, that is the French, continue to suffer numerous defeats in the rest of Europe, especially in Italy and the Netherlands. In fact, it got so bad that Louis XIV eventually pulled most of his troops from Spain to defend his country from the Allies. It worked, but it also weakened Felipe's position in Spain. So Charles came charging back from Barcelona. He took Zaragoza, and he once again entered Madrid in 1710. For the second time to try his hand at convincing people from that city that he would be a good king for them. And once again, it didn't work. In fact, he met even greater resistance. So he abandoned the city, the capital, and pretty much had to accept that he wasn't going to be king of Spain. Now, not all was lost for him. And this also probably influenced the way he did things at this period because he had just been named Holy Roman Emperor. He would become Charles VI, which wasn't a bad alternative at all. And in addition to that, he'd be able to go back to be among the people who were like him and who liked him. On top of that, most of Europe was tiring from the war and ready to move on. The Allied forces were withdrawing from different points. Felipe focused his efforts on one long and difficult siege of Barcelona. The city's inhabitants courageously withstood the pressure for nearly 3 years before succumbing. After that, Felipe imposed this Nueva Planta on both Catalonia and the Balearic Islands. Catalonia's self-governing institutions were abolished, and this will mark a turning point for the region, which it has never forgotten. In fact, Catalonia's official national day is known as the Diada, or the day. It's actually September 11th, which is a big day in many countries for different reasons, and it basically commemorates the day that they surrendered to Felipe's forces, and therefore lost. In a certain way, they felt like it's the day they actually had to surrender to Castile and the rest of Spain. And it's what some consider to be when they lost their status as an independent nation for the last time. Anyway, that was in 1715. But even before that, the ceasefire had stopped in many other parts. The peace talks had begun. And in 1712, the first of the treaties, the Treaty of Utrecht, it got started. That and a few other treaties were sort of a string of agreements that had to be negotiated and agreed on, and it would take several years to get done. So what were some of the major sort of outcomes and consequences of this war? Well, Felipe V is finally recognized as King of Spain. But to do this, he has to renounce his place in the French succession. In other words, he would never be able to become King of France. This is very important because it made it possible for Felipe to get the green light from the other countries like England. So the Bourbon dynasty has now been established, and it is here in Spain. And it will be the only royal family to rule in Spain, with the exception of one case, which we'll tell you about in a later episode. Felipe VI, the current king, is a direct descendant. Spain, as a country, loses the Spanish Netherlands, Naples, Milan, Sardinia to Austria. It loses Sicily to Savoy, Gibraltar, and Menorca to Great Britain. And finally, as we mentioned before, many of the kingdoms of Spain begin to lose their identity as separate entities. They lose their institutions, and all the people from the different former kingdoms are basically considered to be Spanish, at least on sort of an official level. And the crown of Spain is born. Now, that doesn't mean that the regions have lost their identity by any stretch of the imagination, but we'll get to that in due time. Suffice it to say that a number of issues affecting Spain today have their roots that go all the way back to this point in time. So Spain is now more unified than ever, with a new dynasty ready and willing to take the country into a different direction, and with its monarchy no longer associating itself so forcefully with its Catholic identity. In other words, it isn't fighting religious wars aimlessly for the sake of doing that. The country of Spain is moving in a new direction. And in certain ways, things will improve for it. So we'll take a look at what that's all about in the next episode. And that will be all for this episode of Spanish History 101. We hope you've enjoyed it. Please leave us any questions or comments, because we love the feedback. You can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, and Castos. Or if you wish to support Brian's Spain Domain, we'd greatly appreciate it. We work very hard to provide you with the best information about Spain, Spanish history, and Spanish culture. You can do so by clicking on our PayPal donate button on our website. Or if you want to have access to absolutely all of our podcasts and support us regularly, you can check us out on Patreon at the link provided below. Stay well, stay safe, and hasta pronto.